All right, welcome everybody. This is Susan Hyatt. I am with the October Group C for Damn Awesome. And today we are on Coach the Coach from class number 4. So today we're going to practice bringing it all together, but we're still in the phase of just finding the limiting belief that we want to do the work on. And yay, this is the last class you have to endure of not doing anything with a thought. When I pass the baton over, the next practicum, you will be learning thought work, which is very exciting. So today we're going to use all of the tools that you've learned so far, including the 5 whys that you learned last week, and we're going to do that and play hunches in an effort to find the limiting belief that you would do the work on. So what I would love to hear from you guys, though, before we get started on all that, is what questions came up for you guys while you were using the 5 whys? And I know it was a little bit of a short week for everybody, at least in the United States, because of American Thanksgiving. So let me hear it. What happened? How'd it go? What questions came up?
This is Tiffany. I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
I found sometimes with the 5 whys, it would end up going wide instead of deep.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a difficult time kind of keeping the client on track or keeping myself on track. I don't know.
So when you say, I think I understand what you mean about going wide instead of deep, what happened?
It like sometimes it just ended up being we started out with one topic and then as we continued with the whys and another topic came up and then another topic came up and it just kind of spiraled.
Ah, okay. So something that can help with that, though not always, is you guys will notice this no matter what tools you're using. So it really isn't totally indicative of just because you were using the 5 whys. When you actually get into dissolving the thought, other thoughts will pop up all over the place. And this is totally normal. So the strategy for the coach is to keep the client with the original trail, if you will. You can't always do that effectively, but so if you start questioning someone about, well, why is that so bad? Well, why is that so bad? And it starts to veer off onto, they start telling you another story of another painful thought. It's a effort in saying like, okay, we're going to come back to that, but right now I want to bring you back to whatever, whatever. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So sometimes, though, for sure, using the 5 whys can feel like a wild goose chase. So it is a tool that you know, can take you all over the place if you're not, I don't want to use the word directing because that's not the right word, but so it's more about keeping the client with the train of thought that you were on. Because they, you know, they're just there being the client, talking about everything that's bothering them. So it's up to us to kind of be more, I guess, organized. You know, their minds are very cluttered and, you know, they're unpacking all of that stuff. And so they're not thinking like, oh, I need to stay with this train of thought, right? They're just like unpacking everything. So I think that would be my best advice for when that happens, although it can happen with any tool.
Okay. So would you, if another topic came up, but, I mean, are you just listening for your marmoset response at that point? Because what if another topic comes up that seems more important or more sucky than the original thing they started with?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Good point. Yes. So you are always tuning into your guidance and your marmoset response. So you may start with something that is the worst of what you've heard so far, and you may get to work on that. And then they mentioned something that's far more interesting, if you will. Then, yeah, you absolutely shift gears.
Okay. Thanks.
You're very welcome. I think that you'll find, and you may have heard on some of the recordings, and I may have actually joked before on these calls with sometimes clients can become whack-a-mole clients. Do you guys remember that arcade game or that fair game where you have a mallet and your job is to whack the mole on its head when it pops up? And then the better you get at it, the more, you know, the moles start popping up faster and faster and faster. Thoughts can happen in the same way. And there are some clients that we lovingly refer to as whack-a-mole clients, because the closer you get to the thing, the more stuff can pop up. That's totally normal. But absolutely, if in the midst of using the five whys, you get to something that is a more interesting issue, then for sure shift gears. Who else has a burning question about the five whys?
This is Rachel.
Yeah. Hey, Rachel.
Hi. It was not easy doing the five eyes. Like, not that it's supposed to be, but I totally get that it's more of an art form than, like, just asking why. And I'm not sure what my question is other than, maybe it's just the reassurance that it does get easier the more we do it. Is that...
Yeah. It is, and I think that it for sure is an art form, but I don't want to scare you guys away from the tool, because you'll start to become better at it very quickly, and also just to relax your expectation that I think sometimes we can put pressure on ourselves that the tools must reveal something earth-shattering. So there's plenty of times, I mean, the five whys, I have said, is probably my favorite tool because it is so efficient, and I do think it gets to the heart of the matter quickly. But I certainly, even today, use the five whys sometimes, and it's total dumpster, like doesn't go anywhere. And I have to back up and use something else, you know, which is why it's so fantastic that you guys have this huge binder of tools and this amazing, I mean, my gosh, you're going to have more tools than you can ever consider using by the end of this training. So while it's one of my preferred tools, it might not be one of yours, and it absolutely does get easier. And you also will get better at backing out of a trail that you can sense is just a wild goose chase. So, but I think that most folks are not used to answering that question about their thoughts and their life choices or their goals. And so sometimes by even just asking it once, it can be pretty life-changing for somebody. So, yes, it does get easier. All of these tools get easier the more you practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody else have a comment or a question about the five whys? I think, Nicole, you had one that I'm reading.
Yeah, Susan, I did. It was kind of interesting. I did several sessions with people, and it was interesting because, like, the concluding limiting belief, I would say, that came out almost always was, I don't feel like I'm a worthy enough person, you know, on a standalone basis if I don't do X, Y, or Z. And it was just interesting that came out so often. And then they were looking to me to kind of be like, well, how would I change my mind about thinking that I'm worthy if I don't, you know, achieve this or do this or, you know, so they were definitely looking kind of for that next step of working on the limiting beliefs. But I kind of wonder, and we'll probably get into this, but like when you get to the crux of the issue, transitioning them to the thought work and like helping them, you know, believe and trust that they can get beyond that. Was my question. I know that might be part two, but
it's a good one though.
That everybody can. I found it interesting that so many things boil down to that, but also transition-wise, you know, kind of how do you process the next section and like help them feel comfortable that the work is going to help for them too.
Yeah. So. Answering the question, how do I stop thinking this way, is absolutely straight up thought work. Like, you're going to teach them how to stop thinking that way by teaching them how to question and examine their thoughts and then create better feeling thoughts. It is seriously straight up better than the lottery. And interestingly, I mean, most of the deep thoughts that you'll work with on people are thoughts that they've grown up with and many times are widely held beliefs, like that I've had to work on with my husband, and I still do. I catch him saying things all the time like work is supposed to be hard and you have to work hard and play later, that kind of thing, which I completely don't subscribe to. My mantra is, the more fun I have, the more money I make. It works for me. But he, most people do not subscribe to that belief. They subscribe, like, are you kidding me right now? Like, you must work hard and you must do these things and this is how the world works. And so by helping somebody dissolve that thought, if it causes them pain, like some people think, I have to work hard, and it creates zero pain for them. They like to work hard. It doesn't have a charge to it to them. So it has to be a widely held belief that also causes them pain. Otherwise, why would they want to change it, you know? Things like a marriage is between a man and a woman. You know, if you're working with someone who's coming out of the closet, and they were raised with that belief, and they're like, but wait a minute, this is what most of the world thinks. You're like, let me introduce you to Susan Hyatt and all my life coaching friends. But you know, it's an effort in helping them find evidence that supports a better feeling thought. So, yes, the whole world might think that everyone – should go to college. I'm just throwing that out there because I was just working with a parent on this one. Or everyone in your world might think that everyone needs to go to college. So here's how maybe they have a kid who's not college bound. And so they're thinking a lot of painful thoughts about it. And they think, well, this is just how the world works. And this is a truth. It's helping them find their truth and find thoughts that support their truth. And it actually, to me, is my favorite kind of thought work to do because there are plenty of widely held societal beliefs that's all they are. Like, we get to make up our own rules mostly, unless it's against the law. But, you know, so I think that probably most of your clients will have that struggle. It's how I grew up. It's what everyone thinks. It's just the way the world works. Great. I'm about to blow your frickin' mind. Buckle up.
So, yep, I like it.
So they may resist. You know, they may, I mean, they're, you know, some clients are find themselves plowing through thought work more easily than others, and that's okay. But it's just hanging with them, teaching them how to get creative with thought so that they feel better, so that then they can make life decisions from a good feeling place. That all makes sense.
Awesome. Yep. Thank you.
Yeah. You're very welcome. What else came up for you guys doing the five whys? It seems like most of the posts were just, you know, that it went well. Meg, it seems like you had a good experience with it.
Sorry, I was muted. Yeah, I had a really, really good experience with it because a friend of mine that I've known for a very long time has been having some career challenges. And so by going through the five whys, we really got to dig deep into what was really truly important to her. And it was just one of those aha kind of, you know, the skies opened up and she was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. It works. And then, like I said in my post, you know, then of course that filled my ego because then, you know, now she's calling me coach and I'm like, oh yeah, this works. So it was just one of those wonderful things that I got to help her. I got to see her whole persona change from, you know, humped shoulders and everything to walking taller and, you know, sparkle in her eyes, and it was just amazing. So I was really grateful for that process. It was really cool.
Awesome. I love moments like that in coaching where, you know, you can see the shift and the sky opens up for them, and that's cool. I'm glad you had that experience so early on. Cool.
Very cool. Very cool.
All right. Any last minute comments or burning questions about the five whys?
This is Kristen. I just wanted to reiterate again what I posted about how I appreciated the tool for working on things for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because it helped me find the trail, and then that was good practice for when I used that with a client. Was like, oh yeah, here's a good place for me to work with them. That the five whys just kind of helped frame it a little bit, at least in that particular session.
Nice.
Hi, this is Electra. I just have something quick to say. I came on a little bit late. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm glad you told me. I will put you down as present.
Yeah, I came on about 5 minutes ago, but I didn't want to interrupt you. My experience, which I didn't post yet, was I was really impressed with the questions that Meg came up with for me, because we decided she would coach me.
Mm-hmm.
And we were paired together this week. She came up with some amazing questions. Like, I don't think I could have come up with those questions. And I was impressed with how focused those questions were, which I think made them more effective.
Mm-hmm.
So
thank you, Electra.
Yay, I love this. Cool beans. All right, so... here's what I want to just let you guys know about today. So there are no new tools I'm introducing. This is more, we're going to practice some more with whoever volunteers and be thinking if you want to volunteer. We definitely will have time for more than one today. You as the coach can use any of the tools that you've learned up until now. Probably except Body Compass, because what we're doing in today's class is what we did in last class, which is we're trying to identify the limiting belief that you would then do the work on if you were already doing the work. So you want to be playing hunches, you can do that. Using the five whys if you need to. I think it's good to practice that, so I want to encourage you to do that. And then for those of you who are observing, please have a pen and paper handy so that you can jot down the limiting beliefs that you notice the client says. We're concentrating in this class on catching the limiting beliefs and recognizing them as limiting beliefs. And, of course, the most important part of it is trying to figure out what's the most pressing or most important thought to do the work on. So does that make sense to you guys? You get what we're doing?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Yep. Awesome. All right. So anyone instantly feel like they want to be a coach?
Well, I haven't actually coached this week, Susan, because of my situation. So I'm going to be really brave considering I haven't even practiced this and I haven't been on a call for a couple of weeks and say
perfect.
I'm going to coach.
Bonus points, Mary. All right.
I'll just say I apologize in advance because once I start talking, my son may well come like swanning in. So if it all goes horribly wrong and I have to mute and it finishes quickly, apologies in advance to whoever's on the receiving end of that.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm gonna let you know that I'm right here to help you if you need it. And this is the best way to learn. So good deal. Who would like to be Mary's client?
I've scared everybody off already.
No, you didn't. Who was speaking up?
I don't necessarily need to be a client because I've already volunteered, but if nobody wants to, I'll do it.
Is that Electra?
Yeah, but I would love to give someone else a chance. I just didn't want her to feel like no one wanted her because I'm...
Thanks, Electra.
Anybody want to step up? Or...
Yeah.
I can do it.
Who's that?
This is Rachel.
All right, Rachel as the client. Thank you, Electra. If we need you, I will call on you later in the call.
Oh, okay.
All right, awesome. All right, Mary, I'm going to let you take it away with Rachel.
Okay. Hey, Rachel, thank you for volunteering.
Hi, Mary. Yes.
Hey. Okay. Well, I don't know about you, but I need to take a big deep breath. So if that feels right for you, I'm just going to just take a pause and just breathe in and find myself on the seat and just really bring myself to where I'd like to be for you right now. So if that feels okay for you.
That's great.
Okay. So welcome, Rachel. Glad to talk to you today. How are you doing today? Is there something coming up for you today that something in particular really that is you're feeling that you're really having to do right now, something that you may be feeling a little bit of pressure with, that something is just really bugging you that you have to do right now this week?
Something I have to do this week?
Yeah. Or something that's coming up for you that you feel you really have to deal with at the moment that is you can't just shake off.
Well, I talked to my brother. Is there an echo?
Yeah.
Okay.
No. Oh, I'm not getting an echo, but there's a little time delay, I think, so...
Let's try again. Go ahead.
Okay. So, I'm trying to think of something. So, are we going with, like, the least satisfied place sort of thing, or something I have to do, or?
You hat in my yellow ball.
Sorry, guys.
Is that your house?
Yeah, no, it is. It's my son. Just give me 2 seconds. Okay, Mommy, go and watch your movie. Okay, Mommy's just going to be talking for 5 minutes and then I'll be with you, okay? Go and watch your movie, please. Thank you. Sorry, Rachel. Yeah, just what comes up for you right now that we know what's bugging you? What's really sucking this week?
Today is my brother's birthday, so I called him and talked to him before this call. And we're talking about the different roles we play in the family. And it was good. Kind of brought to my awareness my role with my mom. And I don't know, that might be too much for this call, though.
No, we can just go with it and see how it unfolds.
Okay. I've done a lot of work already around it, so it's mostly pretty good. But anyway, so our roles are a bit reversed, and I tend to play the parent role. And but I've realized I might be a little bit attached to that role, and I'd like to do something different about it, but I'm not sure how or what. So.
Okay, so you're feeling that you're... Sorry, Rachel, there's a time delay, so if you pause and I think you finished, I apologize. So sorry, carry on. You were saying that you've identified that you're feeling quite attached to this parent role you have within your family structure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be attached, but I'm recognizing that it's possible that I am because I haven't changed it.
Okay, so do you feel that this is something that you really have to do, that you really have to change that role that you have?
Oh, no, I don't have to change it. Mm-mm.
How does it feel if you ask yourself the question, am I okay with this role just as it is?
Actually, that feels like relief.
Okay, so it brings you relief to actually think that I can just be okay with this. I don't necessarily have to change it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if I can just play a hunch here and just suggest to you that actually a lot of maybe your discomfort and disease was coming more from the idea that something needs to change, that other people's thoughts about your role pressure, putting pressure on you, but you're actually okay with it. Tell me where I'm wrong.
You're partly right. Like, it is true that I have discomfort about perception about the role. And I'm not completely okay with, I would like her to, like, play more of the role of being interested in my life. But I also know I kind of, it's uncomfortable to change, so... There's a bit of a paradox there, I'm aware of.
Yeah. Would it really be so bad if your mum didn't take any more interest than she already takes in your life?
No, actually, it would be okay. I think.
Would it be a problem if she showed even less interest in your life than she does now?
Yeah, I'd probably be okay with that too.
Okay, so just to come back, to bring you back to that original train of thought, you know, about your role being reversed and your mum not necessarily being the parent that we ideally want our parents to be. Why did that original thought feel so bad?
Probably because I was under the impression that it's dysfunctional to be
okay
for me to take on the role of, like, it started when I was pretty young, so I mean, like 11 or 12.
Uh-huh.
She confided, and so it just hasn't ever flipped back. And but I guess there were times when I wanted it more than I did now, but now I'm actually in a good place, and it's okay.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Okay. Well, I would just really like to take a moment to just congratulate you in the fact that you have done so much work and that you are okay with, you know, with that, because to deal with, you know, to work around an idea that, you know, everybody has this impression that it's totally dysfunctional when roles within families are reversed, it's just totally awesome that you can be okay with that in the face of it. And you just, I think you just take a moment to just really feel great about that. And yeah, I'm just really smiling for you right now. And I think I've totally lost my train of thought. I had something to say to you.
No,
but
you're doing great, Mary. You're doing great.
Just totally thrown by the fact that we've identified, you know, I think we've identified the thought that really it's the concept that other people might think it's dysfunctional, but that you're okay with that. And that's awesome.
Well, that's got to be like the fastest coach demo. I was giggling because, like, in the first couple sentences, it was all, you know, she's fine, and you're, and we're all like, okay, but wait, but wait, let's see if there's something else. So I just want to first commend you, Mary, because you had a child in the background that you took care of, and then you came back and you were like, it is down to business time. Let's go. Did you guys notice the change in her voice from,
yes,
from like quieting, yes, her son to then coming back and being like, all right, it's go time, Rachel. Give it up. And Rachel was like, okay, well, I thought I had this problem, but I don't. I thought, Mary, that you did excellent. And it reminds me of when I went through the Master Coach Training Program, Martha taught us three classes on how to write self-help that were amazing. And on one of the calls, one of your instructors you will probably have for something, Jackie Gartman, who's one of my best friends, so I'm not throwing her under the bus. We talk about each other all the time, lovingly. But Jackie came to this call after we were supposed to write this article, and we had to submit an article for Martha to critique, which was nerve-wracking. And so Jackie comes to the call, and Martha assigned all this homework, and Jackie started whining that she didn't have time for all that, that she was working, and she had these teenagers. Her kids were teenagers at the time. And Martha was basically like, cry me a river, Jackie Gartman, get your ass in gear. It was tough as nails, Martha. But one of the things she said that was so interesting to me was she said, you know, if you're expecting for your life circumstances to be amazing and to light candles and put on classical music and have all everything line up so that you can sit down and find time to write, you're never going to write. Like, you have to be able to, I mean, certainly we all have preferences on the working conditions that we love, but Martha actually challenged us to go sit in coffee shops, like go where it's noisy and distracting and learn how to write under those conditions. And so Mary, coming back to the coaching call with that focus, it reminded me of that. Like, even when you have a kid in the background who wants you for something, Legos or I don't know what he wanted, Mary, but to be able to coach under any condition, it's great training. I think you should have your son in the room every time you try to coach. It'll give you intense focus.
I'm sure he would love that too.
So, Rachel, though, so let me ask you, how was that for you, and do you really feel okay?
That was actually pretty revealing to me. I had never thought about the way Mary framed it of what if, are you okay with the way the dynamic is? And I thought, I mean, I always assumed it was not okay. Like, and to think that it could be fine because I've gotten to a place where I'm okay without her, I mean, that was kind of mind-blowing, and I had an emotional response thinking that I didn't have to change it.
Yeah. I mean, it really is a great example of what we were talking about in the intro, that there may be widely held beliefs that everybody thinks. Mary, you could go ahead and mute yourself now. If that's
yeah, okay. I'm trying to. Sorry. Not
that's
working.
Okay. I think you got it. Wait.
Yeah,
is it
no,
star four or four star, guys?
Four star.
There you go. That there may be beliefs like this is how a family should operate, right, that everybody subscribes to or most everybody, but then you get to decide. I'm okay with that role.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the norm. I mean, I don't even know what the norm is, so it doesn't matter. But it's not what I guess I thought I wanted, but it is definitely, if it's up to me, I don't think I can, I'm not going to be able to change my mom.
Mm-hmm.
So that sounds like a belief. But I guess the important thing is where I am with it, because it's not about her, it's about me, right? So, yeah, that's kind of amazing to think about not having to change it and just let it roll.
Interesting. So let me ask you guys who are observing, what did you notice? And did you write down anything that we didn't bring up? Like, I would love to hear what the peanut gallery here has to say.
Hi, this is Carrie.
Hi.
I guess for just first a comment for Mary, I just thought that was fantastic that you were able to come back after dealing with your son too. I was just imagining I would have been so frazzled, and you just handled it so superbly. I guess I was just thinking, I was thinking about when Mary asked Rachel the question about how would you feel about if, or how would you feel if your mom was even less involved? And she seemed to kind of hesitate, and it sounded like it sounded like there was maybe more going on in her head than she talked about. So I was just curious about that.
Okay, Rachel.
Yeah, so if she were less involved, is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
So play a hunch, Carrie.
I guess my hunch is that perhaps you're not okay with her being less involved, that you would like her to be more involved.
It's a hard one because the struggle is that I've gone a long ways. I was raised, I think somebody else on the call had a similar background, but I was raised in a very fundamentalist religious sort of background, and I've gone my own way. And so there's like definitely a separation. And I just wanted my mom, the thing that was causing me a lot of pain was wanting my mom to approve and to feel like she liked me for who I am, even though I'm different. And so I recognize that she can only do what she can based on her comfort. And so applauding my life choices is asking too much, is what it feels like. And so so for her to be less involved, but at this point also I have done my own thing, and it's been really great for me. And so there's a gap there that will probably just be, and recognize it and holding the space that it's okay for there to be that gap. And so for there to be even less, I don't know that that would hurt anymore, because I've kind of healed a lot of the hurt. I have healed a lot of the hurt. So I don't know what else to say, but.
Okay. Awesome. Anybody else have something they want to say, or a hunch, or something you observed?
It's Kristen.
Hi, Kristen.
Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Kristen.
I was listening to that same pause, but I kind of heard it in a different way. Maybe I have a hunch that maybe that distance, that new distance that you're comfortable with yourself, but that maybe the distance has left kind of this emptiness, this void, this confusion about what to do next. Tell me where I'm wrong.
Like about what to do next with my mom, or what to do next
right.
with myself, or
like how to handle that, how to proceed further with her, how to be in relationship with her with that distance in place, because there may have been, you know, with a fundamentalist upbringing or whatever that was for you, that there might even be possibly a little bit of guilt for not meeting her expectations, kind of, you know, I know you feel comfortable inside yourself, but maybe a little bit of guilt for leaving her behind in that way, or creating that distance.
I have worked through feeling guilt for creating the distance, because, yeah, there was a while we didn't really communicate while I was kind of figuring stuff out, and I know that hurt her. And so it has kind of fixed it for me to be the caretaker, like listen to her and like be her sounding board, and that feels like the closest we can get for me to be that, to play that role. But, yeah, I feel like that's kind of my responsibility in order to make it so that we can be connected, if that makes sense.
Yes, so say more about the responsibility that you feel to stay connected to her.
She's been through a lot. Like her dad died when she was 15. Her mom, she was kind of on her own at an early age, and the marriage she had with my dad was, I know it was very difficult for her, and I have a lot of, I guess, compassion for that. I mean, my childhood wasn't necessarily easy. And I wasn't like given, but you know, it was just, I felt like her needs are more important.
Okay.
Okay, so.
Hey, Susan, this is Mary again.
Yeah,
okay, darling, don't worry, it's just a drink. Don't worry, I'll do it in a minute. Just leave it for now. Thank you. Well done. I don't remember what much about that call, to be honest. It'll be interesting to listen back to it. But I do remember that pause. And I I honestly, in that pause, I just felt like Rachel was just breathing in the question because it was something she'd never considered before. And the pause was just really her stepping back and going, oh, okay, never quite thought about it from that point of view. And then she came back and she, you know, said numerous times to me that actually she genuinely feels okay with it. And so I guess my question, Susan, is, you know, when clients say they're okay, even if I guess you have hunches, like a couple of people have hunches that they're not okay, at that time, do you keep digging, or do you wait for that other story to surface at another time in another dialogue? Because it just generally felt that the session sort of naturally wrapped itself up, that, you know, Rachel had this clarity come about from the very few questions we asked, and, you know, it generally felt a good place to naturally wind that certain point up. So,
Well, this is actually a great example of how different people's marmosets will go off for different reasons, and people will have just different reactions to what they're saying. Yeah. And I certainly have had times when I thought that a client was not being let me just back up and say, sometimes clients aren't conscious, but being empathetic, being an empath, I sometimes can feel a client's emotions. And perhaps they're not even conscious to them, you know, that everything is not totally okay. So there's that. There are other times when clients don't want to go there, so they'll say, no, I'm good. Like, let's talk about something else. And I do sometimes challenge them and say, I don't think we're complete here. And really, you know, I might challenge them a little bit if I feel that they can take it. And then other times when I don't think they can take it and I don't think they want to go there and they're unwilling to go there, I let it set for another time. So I don't know that there's any hard and fast rules. Just as a coach, you have to trust your own guidance as to what's going to feel or what's going to pan out the best for where your client's at, if that makes sense.
Yeah, this is Kristen again. I mean, I feel like I got to, I mean, there was definitely, it wasn't necessarily about that particular pause. It was just there was something in what I was hearing or feeling in that whole piece of the exchange that felt like distance, and that's the hunch that I wanted to play was, what do I do with the distance is what was coming up for me. And,
right. Very well played, Kristen. And Kristen, did you notice the last thing that she said?
Absolutely. I circled it. Yes, that was the next place to go. And right. I did also feel a hesitancy from her, so I wanted to just let that sit for a second.
Right. So I'm going to let you sit on it for a second, and I'm going to ask everyone else that was observing, did a limiting belief surface that you would do something with if you knew how yet?
Yes. This is Carrie.
Hi, Carrie. Which one did you identify?
Well, I had a marmoset response, actually, but I wasn't quite sure if I heard her correctly.
Okay.
But what I wrote down, what I thought I heard her say at the very end was, my mom's needs are more important.
Right.
Did I hear that correctly?
Rachel, is that what you said?
Yeah, I did.
Did you hear yourself as you said it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So that, my friends, is the thought that I would be all over, like white on rice, as we say in the South. So, and sometimes, like Rachel, as soon as they say it, they're like, ooh. There's still some work there to be done, right? So,
yep.
And so that might be, you know, where I would go with thought work. Or actually, I might do the five whys on that.
That's exactly what I was thinking too. Yep.
Yeah, I would do the five whys on that. So anybody want to do the five whys with Rachel?
This is Tiffany. I'll do it.
All right, Tiffany. So the thought is, and you want to repeat that back to her. So here's another part of when you identify a thought that you want to wiggle around with. It's important to repeat it back to them exactly as they said it. So it's powerful for the client to hear you say what they just said. If you want to go ahead, Tiffany, and just repeat her belief back to her and then start.
Okay. Hi, Rachel. I don't know if I wrote this down word for word, so I don't know if I can give it to her right exactly as she said it.
The way you said it was right.
So, Rachel, why do you feel that your mom's needs are more important than yours?
Well, I feel like I've done a lot of work on myself, and I've gone to therapy, and I've challenged a lot of my thoughts, and so I feel like she doesn't have she doesn't have a very good support group, so I feel like I can be the support group.
Why do you feel like it's your responsibility to be her support group or person?
I guess because I'm her daughter, so... because she reaches out to me, I guess. So it's hard for me to say no to that. So
why is it so difficult for you to say no?
Probably because she just doesn't have a lot of people. It's also a pattern. So it would be breaking the pattern to say no.
Why is it important? Okay. So It becomes uncomfortable for you to break that pattern. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me where I'm wrong.
Yeah. I mean, she's pretty frail. I mean, she's lost a lot of weight. She's had health issues all of her life. She comes across as a really strong person, like, if you meet her, but then I know that she's doubts herself a lot and has a lot of anxiety, and so she doesn't ask for a lot of help from other people, but her family, like, she leans on us, and so let's see.
Okay, I'm stuck.
No, it's good. I think I might go back to just doing the work on my mother's needs are more important than my own. Because if you notice with this one, the whys just kind of, I think that's the thought is my short term, there's my short answer here, because when we started doing the whys, I mean, some good stuff came up, but it's really stuff that could be disputed or helped with the work. So she was just kind of giving us evidence as to why her crappy thought is true. right? And honestly, that's a sign that you've probably hit the right thought. Like, there's not that much underneath it. So I think I would just kind of circle back and say, okay, your mom's needs are more important than your own. Like, right, she's giving you all the reasons, like, well, she had this childhood and she doesn't have the resources and she, okay.
Yeah, it's kind of circled back.
Right. Yeah. So I think that was a great demo for many teachable moments and reasons. So very well done, you know, all the coaches, everybody who threw out hunches, and Rachel for volunteering. Very, very good. Rachel, how are you feeling?
I'm okay. I'm just recognizing I have more work to do. but it's good. I mean, this is a thing that's been going on for a long time, so it's, I'd love to get it resolved, but I don't really. So I'm guessing we'll have more work to do in the future.
Yay!
Hey, Rachel, this is Mary.
Yes, Mary.
I just wanted to say thank you to Rachel and also just thanks to everyone else as well, and to apologize to Rachel because I didn't actually, the last thing that I wrote down and that I circled was her thought that, you know, that her thought was dysfunctional, and that was my next thing, and I didn't actually hear what she said about her mum, and so I just wanted to say sorry for missing it, and thanks to everyone else for their feedback, because it just goes to show, like, you can write, and it's so important. You need to learn shorthand, so you can write everything down.
Well, Mary, I want to say thank you to you. I mean, you introduced a new thought to me, and I which did provide relief, and I never taken that tactic, and I felt like you were really listening, and you prevented, or you created an opposite thought, which I hadn't done, and I mean, I really would be okay if she were less involved. It wouldn't change who I am. It wouldn't change. It's just my thought about how our relationship should be is what's causing me the pain. So, so you did something really cool. So I wanted to say thank you to you.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity. So thanks,
yeah,
everyone.
It was really well done. Really well done. Very proud of all of you guys. Anybody have any questions about any of that before we move on to another coach volunteer and client volunteer? Okay. All right.
Sorry. I guess I do. This is Carrie.
Hi, Carrie.
I guess a quick question is, is it really important that we try to jot down everything they're saying?
You don't. Are you getting a hand cramp, Carrie? No, you don't have to write down everything they say. In the beginning, it was very helpful for me to just take some notes so that, just like I can't remember who it was talking about when they were using the five whys, they felt like they were going really wide instead of deep with clients. And what that meant was there was just kind of, you can kind of go all over the place sometimes with people. So sometimes taking notes can help you as the coach focused, and keep different things they say that you might want to go back to. That being said, I never wrote down everything they said. I just might make a note like takes care of the mom, or mm-hmm. believes mom's needs are more important than her own. Pertinent
yeah.
notes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
You're very welcome. Yes, you will be graded on transcription services at the end of this training. No. So, okay, who wants to be the next coach? You want to get it in before you get to Miss Amy Pearson.
If nobody else wants to, I would do it. This is Rachel.
All right, Rachel. I am going to put you down. And who wants to be her client?
Do it. I can do it. This is Carrie. Unless
right,
somebody
Carrie.
Else would like to.
You are it. All right.
All right.
This is Kathleen. Can I back up one step and ask a question and nagging in my head?
Yeah. Go ahead, Kathleen.
When they were talking about the mom thing and all that, and I'm sure plenty of us have mom things, and although it comes with a heap of guilt, could a limiting belief be that you should be close to your mother?
It could be. I mean, it depends on who it is and what they talk about. But, yeah, that can absolutely be a limiting belief for many people. I actually worked on that, but with my father. So mine was a good daughter calls her father.
Right.
And no. So yeah, I mean, like, absolutely a mother and daughter should be close is a great limiting belief to work on if that is causing somebody pain, for sure.
Right. Okay, back to being muted.
Awesome.
Thank you.
All right, so Rachel, let me make sure I got this right. Rachel is coaching Carrie. All right, take it away, Miss Rachel.
Okay. Hi, Carrie. How are you?
Hi, Rachel. I'm good. Thank you.
Good. So just checking in with you. Is there anything in your life that could be more fun, something that's not as fun as it could be right now?
Yeah, I think life is decently fun right now. I had quite a bit of fun over the weekend with my family. So I guess, yeah, that wasn't the question I was expecting you were going to ask me.
Well, yeah, did anything come up while you're with your family that you would like to talk about, or
the heavy thought that came up when I was with my family. So I was spending Thanksgiving weekend with my two sisters and their families, and I love my sisters. But in this context, I get just a closer view of their parenting styles. And then my husband and I are separated and are getting divorced. And the thought that kind of came up for me over the weekend that was distressing me was, what if something happened to me? Who would raise my kids? And how would they be raised? And I guess even just to put it more bluntly, kind of a thought like, if something happens to me, my kids are screwed.
Wow, say more about that.
I guess it's just I don't have a lot of confidence in their dad. And that's kind of distressing enough as it is, but then I guess kind of what was a new and that, but that's not really a new thought so much, but I guess I hadn't really spent much time before thinking about like, what if something had happened to both of us and like who should I put down? Like if I, cause I'll have to be revising kind of the will sort of soon. And I was thinking like, who should I put down to raise my kids? If something happen to us, like what would be the best situation for them? And I was feeling kind of distressed because nothing that was coming up as an option was feeling feeling very good.
Wow, yeah. I'm going to go back to that thought. What if something happened? If something happened to me, my kids are screwed. That sounds like a very painful thought. Tell me.
That's kind of a heavy one.
So,
because I guess part of me wants to, there is a part of me that wants to think that they would be, or maybe that recognizes that they are, you know, they are their own unique people on their own journey, and that they will be okay no matter what happens to me. That's kind of what I want to believe.
Okay. So you believe that they're their own unique people. They have their own journey. So why would they be screwed if that's true?
I guess I feel like no one, or maybe I should say the other potential people in their lives that would be raising them are very caught up in their own issues, and I don't think would be able to be very there for them. And I kind of imagine them getting lost and basically having to fend for themselves. And then that makes me feel very fearful and worried. And then I think, well, they're not old enough yet to fend for themselves.
Okay. So I have a hunch. Is it possible that my hunch is that you at some point had to fend for yourself when you weren't quite old enough? Tell me where I'm wrong.
Oh, I think that's true. Yeah. I think that's true. Right, and I don't want them to have that same experience.
So,
That's good.
And
I think I have put a lot of energy into trying to make their childhood be different from my own.
And so if you you've put a lot of energy into creating something different, and my hunch is that you have, tell me where I'm wrong, created a different situation for them than what you had.
I think I have. I have. And then I guess the fear is, but then if I'm not there, there's no replacement. Mm-hmm. But like that won't be sustained. That wouldn't be able to be sustained.
Right, the energy that you've put into creating a different environment and letting them be their own people, if they were to go live with your sisters, it would be more like your own childhood.
That's my fear. Yeah, that's my fear.
So, Carrie.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Rachel.
Yes. I'm a little stuck.
So, you're doing fantastic. There's a not yet spoken limiting belief that is a hunch of mine. I'm wondering if you have a different hunch you want to play before I ask people who are listening if they have a hunch they want to play.
I feel like there's something, but I can't quite put words to it. So
let me just back up and say that the limiting belief she led with, in my opinion, is worthy enough to do the work on without a whole lot of other canoodling around, which is partly why you're probably feeling a little stuck.
Okay.
So the belief, if something happens to me, my children are screwed.
Great.
You could be off to the races with that. I'm just gonna say. That's a great one that you could start with. But if I were to ask the question why, I think I have a hunch of how she would answer that. And I'm just curious if any of the rest of you coaches listening have a hunch or something you want to play here.
This is Meg, and I would like to play something if I could.
Great. Okay.
So, is it Carrie or Rachel that we're coaching?
Rachel is the coach, and Carrie is the client.
Okay, Carrie. So, I understand that you're fearful that if something happens to you, that your children are not going to be taken care of in the same manner. Why do you think something is going to happen to you?
I don't think something is going to happen to me. at least I hope not. My hope is that I am able to be with them and help raise them until they, and kind of launch them successfully. So I don't think that something is going to happen to me. Or that's
okay.
It's not something, I guess that's not something that I think I worry a lot about. I guess maybe I would phrase it like, I don't fear death or not, excessively. But my fear of dying before they are raised is a bigger fear than my fear of dying. That's,
mm-hmm. Okay, so if you don't mind my asking, how old are your children?
They're 8 and 10.
Okay, so within, say, the next, say, 10 years, do you foresee that there would be something, that would cause you to not be around to raise them?
I'm sorry, that's my dog barking. I'm trying to move away from him.
Okay.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Sure. So your children are 8 and 10, and, by 18, and 20, they would be adults, certainly old enough to join the military and vote, that kind of thing. So in 10 years, is there anything that you can foresee that would cause you, other than an accident of some sort, is there anything that would prevent you from being able to raise your children?
No. I'm healthy and... Right, there's...
Okay.
Other than an unforeseen accident.
Okay. So, is your... I'm trying to think of how to say this, the right way. So do you think that you have, do you think that this is a good realistic fear that you have, that you might not be able to raise your children, but yet you're very healthy, and, if you could hang around, so to speak, for 10 more years, then they would be young adults and you have given them the tools. Is that, tell me where I'm wrong.
Yeah, I guess I well, I'm not sure. Yeah, I feel like if I can be around for at least the next 10 years, that would give me enough time to educate them well enough that they would have the tools to be able to successfully cope with the stuff that life throws at them. But I don't feel like they're there yet. I don't feel like. So when I worry about, like, if I worry about something happening to me, that's the first thing that comes up. But is that, like, I haven't had enough time to communicate everything that needs to be communicated.
Is there some sort of plan or goal, like, list of things that you feel you need to communicate to them that you could put down on paper so that you could feel like actively every day you are working through that fear, so that by the time they are that age, even if you are still around and you're still okay, you'll feel like you've given them all the tools that they need?
Well, hold up. Hang on, Meg. I'm just going to interject here because now we're problem solving.
Okay.
Right? It's actually a great suggestion, and there's lots of things, but we're not there yet. So she may opt to do that, or you may get to that point anyway with her, but let's not go there yet because we're still kind of – I actually liked the take you took with her, like, you know, why the concern with mortality. That was really good. But I'm just going to pause you there, okay?
Sure.
We'll,
yeah.
Okay. All right. Anybody else have anything they want to play or try as a hunch?
Hey, Susan. This is Mary.
Oh, hi, Mary.
Hey. Okay. Oh, did somebody else want to say something?
Oh, just Lisa, go ahead.
I had a hunch.
Nikki does too. Okay, I'll come to you right after Mary, Nikki.
Sure. Mine wasn't actually a hunch, and kind of it was more sort of around the five whys and going back. Hey, Kerry, it's Mary.
Hi, Mary.
You know, going back to your original thought, you know, if I'm not around, my kids are screwed. Why does that feel so bad for you?
Because it feels too much is dependent on me. Like it's all the eggs in one basket.
Okay, and why is that a problem, that all of the eggs are in one basket?
I don't think it is. As long as I'm around, if I'm around, then it's fine that all the eggs are in one basket. But I think that's why, though. But if something happens to me, their care isn't diversified enough.
Okay. So if something were to happen to you, worst case scenario, what, you know, and your children are with somebody else, would that be so bad?
That feels very bad. Okay. I mean, it feels. I think that's. It's what feels bad are the options. If I felt like that they could be somebody with somebody who was. I guess like I feel like there are probably several people who are. who are like near strangers who would raise them better than their dad.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm going to still bring you back to that thought that if something happens to you and, you know, your kids are screwed, they're with somebody else, tell me why that feels so bad.
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Yeah, go back to that. I'm going to bring you back to that original thought again and tell me why that original thought of something happening to you and your children be with somebody else, being raised by somebody else, and there's nothing much you can do about it. Why does that feel so bad?
I think it feels like I will have failed them.
Okay. Okay.
Like it's my responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are you okay, Kelly? Do you feel okay to continue with where you're at right now in the coaching, teaching scenario? Do you want to carry on and just see if we can work through it a little bit?
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's why it feels so bad, is it feels like I will have failed them.
Okay.
So the thought, let me just interject here. So one of the thoughts is, if I leave my children to be raised by their father, I will have failed them.
Yes.
Does that sound accurate?
Okay.
So this thought right here, I would absolutely, great job, Mary. I would absolutely do the work on. There's, you guys can see how it's an onion, right? Peeling the onion. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of them here, a lot of thoughts wrapped up in this belief system. Anybody else have a hunch they want to play here?
I have a general hunch. This is Electra.
Oh, wait. Oh, hang on, Electra. I forgot that Nikki had a hunch. I forgot to go to her next.
Sure.
Sorry, hang on just a sec. Nikki, what were you going to say?
No worries. My hunch, as we delved a little bit more into the conversation, was that Carrie has fear that her children would experience maybe some of the pain and perhaps loneliness, you know, she may have experienced in life and not having the care that she thought it needed. And when she sees the family probably representing, you know, perhaps a similar family style of being raised as she did, she fears they'll have to experience the same pain and perhaps sense of aloneness that she did when she was young. Does that feel like a truth, Carrie, or tell me where I'm wrong?
Mm-hmm. No, that feels true. That feels very true.
So protecting them from pain is really, you know, the challenging thought. And you not being here to protect them feels very scary.
Yes, it does.
Okay, good one. These are all great. Lots of entry points with this one. Electra, what were you going to contribute?
I was going to say that I had a hunch that the worry that they're not old enough. I mean, because I feel like mothers in general, when their kids are young, this is an issue that at what point do you feel that they're hatched enough in the environment that, you know, your control can be relinquished a little on this point, like meaning not being around or, so I guess my hunch was, you know, that you lose control over being there for your children, at some point you have to allow that control to go, you know, to not be there. But it's not usually at that age that her kids are, and it shifts kind of slowly. And so I guess my hunch was like, where, you know, I where does that, could she let go of the control and hand it to her husband or her family to have a discussion about it? Like, would it be hard for Carrie for you to reveal that fear a little bit to the people that might actually be involved in doing something if something was to happen, which it won't probably, but, you know, it's a thought. So, I mean, would it be appropriate for you, would you feel like it was appropriate to discuss it with your family, for example, or with somebody who, you know, could be in a position to guide your kids if something happened to you, other than your husband or even with your husband?
That's actually a great suggestion for later. So just like Meg's awesome suggestion, we want to really wait to problem solve until we've dissolved the thought. But, yeah, that certainly could be part of, you know, if she felt that that was something she wanted to do after we did thought work, which you guys haven't learned yet. So,
yeah, I have trouble with the hunches, I think, because I have trouble with the hunches because they tend to blend into problem solving quickly.
Well, remember that your hunch is never about what the client should do. Your hunch is always around what they're thinking.
Okay.
So I have a hunch that you think you're the only one that can raise them correctly. Tell me where I'm wrong. That's a hunch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you just say yeah?
Yeah.
That was my hunch. Which it was part of everybody, like everybody did a great job, but I was, you know, the thought, which you already said, the thought, if something happens to me, my children are screwed, I was thinking, well, why would that be true? And it's only true if you hold the belief that I'm the only one that can raise my children properly. And so I might, which I think most parents can have that, you know, do have that kind of belief, like I gave birth to them, or I adopted them. I am their mother, or I am their father. Therefore, I am the best one to raise them. So it's almost a natural thought to have until it's where you're causing yourself pain because you worry about what in the world if it should happen to me. So, I don't know. I think I might, as a coach, I might just go back to the original thought. If something happens to me, my children are screwed. That's such a juicy, charged statement. I would probably do the work on that belief. And then, like Meg and Electra, who came up with some great problem-solving suggestions, that can happen with the client after the painful thought is dissolved. Because, right, if she's able to let go of that thought, she may not feel any need whatsoever to do any of the fantastic solutions we've come up with because the thought has let go of her. Or she's
so can I ask a question, Susan?
Yes. Yes.
So what? You made the hunch. I'm the only one that can raise my children properly. Would it be more of a hunch to say? Like for me, this is a hunch I might popped into my head from what you said, is to say I have a hunch that you feel like you're going to disappear if you're not around to raise your children.
I mean, that's a hunch. That's worded like a hunch, absolutely.
And what I mean by that is that I would make a hunch that if you don't think anyone's able to raise your children the way you would, you feel like that you're not going to exist for them in their memory if you don't if you don't have someone who really can raise them.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you feel like you're not going to be around even in a memory.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my hunch, is that it makes her invisible.
I have to make a caveat to no, I don't actually think that's it. And then because I have to revise when I agreed to your hypothesis, Susan, about that I'm the only one that can raise them correctly, because I guess that's only partially true. I feel like of the available options, I'm the only one that can raise them correctly. Of my immediate family, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think that there would be other people, other
in the world.
People who could,
at large.
Who could, in the world, yes, who would raise them correctly.
That brings this, Kristen, that brings me to the one that I didn't voice that I had. Can I throw mine out there? Kristen,
go ahead.
Carrie, I did hear you say that even a stranger could do better than the people that you already had around you. So the panic that I was hearing was maybe about time. And I thought maybe my hunch was that you are worried that you haven't had enough time to do what you need to do to find somebody to cover that if anything were to happen to you, and that you haven't had enough time to do whatever you need to do with your kids so that they would be equipped if that were to happen. Does that sound?
It sort of, in the sense that, I feel what would help me not worry so much about it is if I felt that there was some way I could communicate everything. Like, I feel like they're too young to communicate everything I feel that is necessary to communicate to them. So maybe that idea of kind of like writing stuff down, and so that would be available to them at some point in the future, would help alleviate some of that fear. But then I don't know in the sense that it's time so much as just like the reality of the options. Like, for example, I feel like one of their babysitters is a very kind-hearted woman, and I think she would do a fantastic job of raising them. But there's no way in reality, it just seems like that would be extremely unlikely to actually make happen, because legally their dad would have rights and that sort of thing. I guess I'm sort of problem solving myself now, but right. So maybe I could work out some kind of hybrid scenario, but if I'm literally dead, then there would be no way of me to enforce that or, see that happens.
So did you feel a little bit caught off guard by the realization or the thought that you were starting to think about those things?
I guess because previous to this weekend, I had felt a bit more reassured about my own immediate family. I mean, their dad is kind of a different story, but I just kind of seeing with my own eyes what my sister's parenting styles were, I was feeling like this would be suboptimal. It would be a suboptimal situation.
Okay.
And right, that wasn't something that I had really in my head before.
So maybe back to that where Susan was going to, which is at least at this point kind of a combination, that you feel like you're the only one and that it could happen at any minute and you feel unprepared.
Yeah.
Is what it sounds like. Mm-hmm. Tell me where I'm wrong there.
Yeah. Yep. That is true.
Okay.
So there, great work. There's a lot to be done with this one, and I hope that you get with a coach or a coaching buddy on it so that you find some peace around it. I think that many, many parents would worry, which is why there are wills, like what happens. If something happens to me, what happens to my children? So I think probably every parent has had the thought, like, what would I do? And if the options around you aren't to your liking, then there's quite a bit of coaching to do so that you can calm your mind enough to find some workable solutions. So I want to thank everybody who contributed. You guys are coaching. You're doing great. So here's the dealio. Just like with all your other classes, you're charged with homework, which is to coach 2 to 3 people practicing putting all this together that you've learned to date, and also to be the client once, at least once. And I'm passing the baton to Amy Pearson. So if you have questions for me and put them on the forum, of course I'll answer. But your next week's class or your next Coach the Coach class, I don't know if it's actually next week or not, is for Practicum 2, is with a different master coach who you will love. And thank you for letting me be with you guys for the past month.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. It's been so much fun to be with you.
thank you.
I have to also say best attendance ever. I knew Group D for Damn Awesome was going to be damn awesome. So you guys are on it. So carry forth. Coach the world.
Yay. You too. Take care.
Bye, guys.
Thank you, Susan.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.